You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
Hand across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Billy Joel Embiid. You may be right, I may be crazy, but it just may be a lunatic you're looking for. That's me, I'm the lunatic. And this is episode 281. Woo! On today's show, the Knicks lose to the Pistons 115-109. I'm going to share with you guys the roller coaster ride of emotions I went on upon learning that Frank Ntilikina, our beautiful, sweet baby Frank, would not play in this one due to illness. I'm going to talk about one of my favorite Knicks plays of the season. Yes, it happened in this game. One of the very best Knicks plays of the season happened in this game. And I'm going to break it down for you. I'm going to praise the Knicks passing, especially Burke's passing. And yes, Michael Beasley's passing, and so much more. Before we start the show, just want to say sorry that I had to miss a couple episodes because of my business trip to Chicago. I missed you guys. I'm glad to be back. I hope you can forgive me. All right, hit it, Marv.
Yes.
So the big news right off the bat is that Frank Ntilikina, the hope now that Kristaps Porzingis is done for the season of the future Knicks. I'm not going to say the only thing I care about going forward. One of the things I care about the most going forward, did not play in this one due to an illness. I couldn't figure out what exactly the illness was. I didn't see any elaboration online, but when people say illness, it's usually some sort of flu thing. So I'm sure Frank is fine. But it was a huge bummer. Because to me, you guys know that I think Frank's the most important player after Kristaps, by far. So then you're like, what is there to watch without the two cornerstones of the franchise playing? You know, you saw this. I'm sure you were bummed. And plus, this is kind of a weird counterintuitive thing. But follow me here. Follow me. Frank Ntilikina, let's face it, he's inconsistent right now, which is to be expected, not a huge deal. But there's also this element of suspense before every game. Because he's inconsistent, you're like, is this going to be one of his super aggressive nights that make me convinced that he's the future of the franchise? Is it going to be an offensive dud? It's never a defensive dud. We know that. But there's like an element of excitement there that you miss at the end of a tanking season. If Frank Ntilikina is not playing, there's not the possibility to see a young player do something they've never done before. Of course, there are other young players on the roster. But, you know, I think Frank is the most important one after Kristaps. So without the possibility of seeing him do something special and new, it took a little luster off this one. He didn't play. Which leads us to the starting lineup. What is the starting lineup without Frank, although probably wasn't going to be in it anyway. But the starting lineup was Burke at point guard, Timmy at shooting guard, Troy Williams at the three, Beasley at the four, and Kyle O'Quinn at the five. Lee and Cantor were also out in this one. Cantor, of course, suffered that back injury the other day. And when I saw this lineup, my first thought was, man, I would love to see Frank in this lineup. But then I kind of was like, well, if he did play in this lineup, you wouldn't see THJ, otherwise known as Tim Hardaway Jr., at the two, because he would play the three. He's played the three almost exclusively this season. And then I was like, well, that's interesting. I'll get to see Tim Hardaway play some minutes at the two. That'll be fun. Plus, there's something almost illicit in the pleasure that I got from seeing Troy Williams in the starting lineup. And he wouldn't have been in the starting lineup if Frank was there. Not that I'm like, happy. That doesn't really justify it, but what I want to say is, at first blush, this was a disaster from a I-have-no-reason-to-watch-this perspective. But then almost immediately, I was able to overcome this mortal blow and find some unexpectedly titillating incidents in this game, otherwise known as UTIs. And that includes one of my favorite plays of the season. Maybe the best Knicks play of the entire season. Not many to choose from, if you're being pessimistic. Let's talk about it. It was the first minute of the first quarter. There was a Kyle O'Quinn dribble handoff to Tim Hardaway Jr. at the top of the arc. So Kyle O'Quinn dribble hands off to Tim Hardaway Jr. Kyle O'Quinn rolls to the rim. Tim Hardaway Jr. hits Kyle O'Quinn on the roll, passing over the top of the double team from the pick and roll. The help defense comes over to impede Kyle O'Quinn's progress. Kyle O'Quinn sees this, is alert, and hits Beasley in the weak side corner behind the three-point line, which was the right read because it was Beasley's man who was the help defense who came over to stop Kyle O'Quinn's drive. Meanwhile, Troy Williams is on the left wing behind the three-point line. His man leaves to help on Beasley. Beasley sees this, swings it to Williams. Williams swings it to Tim Hardaway Jr. at the top of the arc. Tim Hardaway Jr. swings it to Burke on the right wing. Burke nails the three from the right wing. This is the kind of play that Golden State or San Antonio converts like three or four times per game, but the Knicks do about once per fiscal quarter. So I loved it so much. What I loved was the initial action doesn't yield a great shot. It yields an okay shot. There's the dribble handoff. Kyle O'Quinn rolls. He has like an open, you know, floater or leaner, depending on how he wants to approach it, from about 10 feet out. Not terrible, but he doesn't take it. He doesn't take the good shot. He makes the right read. And four passes later, you've got a wide open three-pointer for the New York Knicks. This is Chef Kissing Fingers.gif at its best. It's also, I think, a good example of the difference between Cantor and Kyle O'Quinn, of the many differences of their game stylistically. With Cantor, that ball's probably not coming back out when he rolls. Now, I need to caveat this because there's a time and a place for aggressiveness. It is good to take shots at the rim and draw fouls, as Cantor frequently does. But when he gets that deep post position, when he like penetrates, if you could call it that, it's much less likely to lead to a three-point play on average than when Kyle O'Quinn gets the ball in the same position. You guys might think I like the three-point play too much, but let's face it, three is more than two by 50%. And the fact that Cantor so infrequently in these types of plays makes a read that leads to a three-point play, you know, he scores a lot down low, so it's not terrible. But when Kyle O'Quinn's in the game, the ball moves a little bit better. He's a much better passer. The team in general is more involved. There's a few more three-point plays because of things like this. And this adds up over the course of a game, over the course of a season, over the course of 100 possessions, whatever you want to, you know, any kind of like thing that's more than a couple of plays. It adds up. And it's just one of the small things that makes Kyle O'Quinn a more efficient player, I think, than Enes Kanter, even though Enes Kanter is very efficient on offense, you know, when you just look at his individual stats. There is another similar play to this with a Burke-Kyle O'Quinn pick and roll that led to an open corner three for Hardaway in the third. It was basically the same play, only with Burke running the pick and roll versus Tim Hardaway. Kyle O'Quinn kicked it out to Beasley in this one, who swung it to Tim Hardaway Jr., but it had one less pass than the play that I just described. So it gets second billing, second place in the prize for basketball beauty. But this is what I'm saying. We find UTIs all over the place in the end of a tanking season. And in this one, we were bummed that Frank wasn't going to play. But almost immediately, one of the best plays, one of the most fun, exciting basketball plays of the Knicks season happened within the first minute of the first quarter. I want to keep talking about the Knicks passing, about Burke's passing ability, about Michael Beasley's passing in this one. But first, I want to talk to you guys about something a little bit more serious. If you or a loved one lived in, worked in, or visited Lower Manhattan in the months after the September 11th attacks, and have been diagnosed with cancer, federal benefits and health care may be available to you. Attorney Eddie Markowitz has helped many families recover substantial benefits from the September 11th Victims Compensation Fund. The James Adroga Health and Compensation Act, which is what keeps this September 11th Victims Compensation Fund running, has been extended, so there's time to claim these benefits and this health care, but time is limited. Attorney Markowitz is proud to serve as counsel to the Zadroga family. Let him help you too. These benefits are not just for rescue workers, but for anyone who qualifies. The fund covers many cancers, including prostate, skin, lung, and breast cancer. Please call 1-800-LAW-HELP. That's 1-800-LAW-HELP to see if you qualify. Let's talk about Trey Burke's passing. I've talked a lot about his offensive game, how well he scored in his time with the Knicks. I've talked about his defense, its ups and downs. I haven't talked too much about his passing, and it's sort of an oversight on my part, to be honest, because partially I think it's that he calls his own number a lot. You know, I'm used to this season watching a Jared Jack, a Frank Ntilikina, you know, very pass-first point guards. Burke calls his own number a lot, and that's okay. And he's got some acrobatic plays. And when you combine those two things, his acrobatic plays, calling his own number a fair amount of time, it reminds me of Derrick Rose, to be honest, and it gives me post-traumatic stress disorder. But even though he's calling his own number a lot, he really looks for his teammates all the time. And in this game specifically, he made all the right reads, I think. He had 15 assists. He was constantly trying to set up his teammates. Then he was more aggressive. Like, he started off looking to pass. He got more aggressive in the second quarter when the team needed him to score more. He tried to get more aggressive in the fourth when they needed him, when Beasley couldn't score every single bucket. More on him in a moment. He got a little bit cold from the field. Didn't work out too well. But he's really point guarding very well. His first mode is to probe the defense, see what he can get, not pick up his dribble, attack when appropriate, pass when he gets the defense to collapse, make the right reads. He's been doing a good job of it, and he did a really good job of it in this one. Nice job of rebounding, too, in this one, just to, you know, give him props for his all-around play with 5 rebounds out of the point guard spot. That is wonderful. Lots of long rebounds with these three-pointers. Point guards, shooting guards. You guys got to be paying attention out there. And Burke was. Speaking of passing, let's keep on the passing theme. Shouts to Beasley. I mean, the big story that some people may try to sell you on in the mainstream media is that Beasley scored 32 points. And he did. He called his own shot enough to score 32 points in this one. Very efficiently, too, I believe. Let me open up the box score. 14 of 21 for 32 points. I mean, that's pretty good. 3 of 4 from downtown. He was open and he pulled the trigger, as he should, as I've been asking him to. So, props there. But he did a great job of keeping the ball moving in this one. A really good job. He displayed excellent offensive balance. And again, he gave the Knicks points when they needed them badly in the fourth quarter. I can get on Beasley sometimes for being a black hole on offense, even if he scores efficiently, like Cantor can. But I can't give him any kind of shit in this one. And he deserves props. He only had 3 assists, but just lots of ball movement. He was in all those plays I was talking about where they were swinging around the perimeter. He kept the ball moving. He only really went into ISO play when the Knicks needed it. And that's exactly what you want out of Beasley. That being said, there was one small thing that annoyed me in this one. He makes a big show of closing out on shooters sometimes. What I mean by that is he'll run guys off the three-point line, which is good. He'll close out. He'll run them off the three-point line. But what he frequently does is just explode past them and take himself out of the play. And they can just simply sidestep him and shoot a wide-open three. They duck under him flying by, step over a couple inches, shoot a wide open three. So when the Knicks don't close out, that's infuriating. That's like the first level of like, what the fuck are you doing? You got to close out. So you're like, all right. But then when you close out, you got to close out with control. One of the things they say is great about James Harden is that, yes, he's quick. He's got a good first step. But he might be one of the quickest decelerators in the league. And this is a skill, deceleration, breaking, if you will, that's important on both offense and defense. If you can stop on a dime, you're getting a lot of open shots. Michael Jordan was a master at that, right? But it's also super effective defensively because if you can stop on a dime, on a closeout specifically, you're making the guy most likely drive on you. And that's really running a guy off the three-point line, not letting him sidestep you, but you're making him drive, right? And if you stop on a dime, not only are you taking away that sidestep three-pointer, but you're then in better position to contest what's probably going to be a drive. So Beasley does this a lot. I'm not trying to get on him too much on his 32-point performance. He played pretty well. That being said, I mean, what could be more Beasley than struggling to put on the brakes? You know what I'm saying? Bees gonna bees. Doesn't always, you know, play the best defensively. What was his plus minus in this one? He was plus one. So he was still of the starters. Hardaway was plus 10. Burke was minus one. He struggled in the pick and roll. He struggled with Ish Smith, Clyde's favorite player. He loved Ish Smith for some reason. Kylo Quinn was plus 8. Troy Williams was plus 6. Troy Williams was 2 for 3 from downtown. That was nice. Michael Beasley was plus 1. So toward the bottom and plus minus of the starters. Some of that's some defensive issues, right? We know about that. But still love you, Bees. And just to give you more props, because why not? The fourth quarter, he went on a nice run, like I said, when they needed him offensively. At one time, he scored 9 straight Knicks points, culminating in the highlight reel play of the night. My favorite play of the night, like I said, was that first play in the first quarter with many passes that led to a three-pointer off the dribble handoff. But this was the highlight reel play of the night. He split a double team at the right elbow. They came to double him because he was on fire. And it's tough for a big guy like Beast to split a double team because you got to make yourself skinny. He's big. It's like getting over a pick. You got to make yourself skinny to split it. But he split it, and then he yammed it on Andre Drummond, who did, you know, I'll say he played with physicality in this one. Andre Drummond, he played pretty well. But he got stunned a couple of times. More on that in a bit. And none more ferociously than when Beasley yammed it on him in the fourth quarter. I want to close by talking about a couple of stray thoughts, a couple of UTIs, a couple of bad plays. But before I do, I just want to remind you guys that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network in the entire multiverse. Unexpectedly titillating play number one. Someone in the first quarter shouted, "Block that shit, Troy!" when Troy Williams was trying to block someone from behind. There's hot mics in this one. A lot of cursing at the MSG network. Microphones picked up, and I applaud them for that. I like the sounds of the game, you know what I mean? I think it was Timmy. And if it was Timmy, it made me happy because he sounded very active. All on that play, he shouted, "Good help, KO! Block that shit, Troy!" And then he shouted, "Go, go!" when they grabbed the rebound. I actually watched the play like it was the Zapruder film. If you're young and don't know what the Zapruder film is, shame on you. Look up the assassination of our president, John F. Kennedy, and you'll find out what it is. And I watched this play like a million times, and it was either Beasley or Timmy. I was able to eliminate the other three guys on the court. It's got to be Timmy, though. I just don't know for sure. Like, I wouldn't bet my life on it. But I want to give a, you know, tentative props to Timmy for communicating, big upping his teammates, being vocal out there. It's important. Bad play of the game. An inbounds play with 7:22 left in the first. It was a baseline out-of-bounds play, otherwise known as a blob. Troy Williams was unable to see the ball and his man at the same time, which is a Clyde pet peeve. The ball got inbounded to his man, but he didn't see the guy throw it in. He was trying to keep his head on a swivel, I'll give him that. He wasn't, like, lazy, but he just wasn't able to keep track of both. He didn't see the guy throw it in. But then he, like, sensed the ball kind of near him because he threw it past him. And then he, like, spun around and tried to swipe at the ball, but he missed it. Then he was out of position as his man received the pass, and his man blew right by him for a dunk. So, not a great play from Troy Williams, although he had some nice plays in this one. His man, by the way, was Stanley Johnson. I mean, I'm going to tell you that just so you know. It wasn't really important who his man was, because it wasn't about who he was guarding. It was about him struggling to see the ball and his man. I will say that's complicated. It's not easy to keep your head on a swivel like that. You're trying to keep track of a lot of shit, especially when you're new to a team. You're thinking about what the right coverages are, blah, 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 blah. I'm not saying, you know, he's irredeemable trash because of this, but it wasn't a great play. UTI number two, Kyle O'Quinn shouted, "Give me that shit!" while blocking Andre Drummond in the second quarter. Said there were hot mics. I wasn't lying. UTI number three, Troy Williams hit Timmy backdoor on a blob, a baseline out-of-bounds play. In the third quarter. So he was on the giving end this time. He was on the receiving end in the first quarter. And on the giving end in the third quarter. He hit Timmy when his man wasn't looking. And he let out a scream of joy. I think he remembered that first play. He was like, yes, I did it right this time. Also of note, Dotson got a little bit of burn in this one. And I thought he looked good. He showed some nice aggression on drives to the hoop. He showed a little Euro step action. What was his final line, Dotson? He got 17 minutes, 3 of 4 from the field. He made his one free throw, 2 rebounds, 7 points. Only one turnover, but no assists. But he showed some things that I hadn't really seen, which was a nice little Euro step, some nice aggression. We've seen him be aggressive in the past. He hasn't gotten too much playing time, TBH. But I liked some of the things that I saw from him in this one. The final thing I want to talk about is Ron Baker made an appearance in the booth to start the second quarter. And he talked with Clyde and Kenny Albert. He said, "I'm in the hot seat now, and I'm ready to get this live game action." And Ron's got a weird demeanor. He's very monotone. I don't know if it's the Kansas in him or just his personality. Clyde said to him, "Happy belated birthday." It was his birthday recently. "Did you know I'm an Aries too?" And Ron, all deadpan, was just like, "Lucky us." Which was sort of funny, but kind of weird. I hope you're not making fun of Clyde, Ron. I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know what I'm going to do. Only I'm allowed to make fun of Clyde. We learned that he was a finance major, likes crunching numbers. Not surprising. I think he's got a number cruncher's sense of style. Makes sense there. That haircut. Woof. Woof, Ron. It's not funny anymore. You got to get rid of that. You look like an SEC frat boy. Stop it. Cut it out. Now, there was one major controversy, in my opinion, from Ron Baker's time in the booth. He claims... They did a little trivia question. It was like, what else does Ron like to do? Like, cooking? Video games? Or I forget what the third one was. Travel? Something stupid. And it turns out it was cooking. But then he said he likes to cook. He's like, "I like to make pasta and I like to grill." And both of those things are like totally Fisher-Price, my first cooking things. Grilling is just slapping some meat, you know, over some coals. And like pasta, you know, look, both these things, making pasta and grilling meats, you can be a grandmaster and spend your entire life perfecting them. But is he making pasta from scratch? What about the sauce? Is he making that from scratch? You know, obviously you can be a sublime chef who makes pasta or grills things, but what's Ron Baker's recipe? Like, I feel like he's pouring jar sauce on some spaghetti. I feel like he's putting a hamburger on a grill. I need answers. I call BS on this hobby. You don't like cooking, or that's all you can say. Do you ever sous vide something? Do you ever spatchcock a chicken, roast it, then make your own stock? Do you ever use that homemade stock in your own bolognese sauce? Are you making bolognese? What are you doing? Wild mushroom crostini? What are you doing? You making buttermilk fried chicken? You know? Do you know what I'm saying? I don't know. I don't know if we can trust Ron. He's a shifty guy. At the end, Clyde closed out by telling Ron to keep shaking and baking. And I want to close out this episode by telling you guys to keep shaking and baking. That's it for me. So glad to be talking to you. So glad to be back talking to you. I'm talking. You know, I talk talking. I'm talking. All right, losing the thread. If you got a moment, rate us on iTunes. Subscribe to the show if you haven't already. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks. Follow us on Twitter, Locked On Knicks. Follow my joke account on Twitter. I mean, it's not a joke. It tells jokes. It's very serious business. NBA injury report. Be chill to each other. Spay and neuter your pets. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Have a good rest of your weekend. I'll see you guys soon. Peace!